jar and be better off than you are.
Or would you rather be a pig?
A pig is an animal with dirt on his face. His shoes are a terrible disgrace.
Okay, we're playing a Bing song because we're going to talk about Bing, right?
Yes.
He's fat and lazy and extremely rude.
But if you don't care a feather or a fig, you may grow up to be a pig.
All right.
Well, there you go.
Our friend Big Crosby.
Bing. The Binger.
Hey, this is Steve Borsch. Welcome to the Minivate Gang podcast for Saturday, May 30th, 2009. And I'm on with Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
And Tim Elliott.
Are you calling Phil and I pigs?
No.
You'd be a pig.
We live down in the farm here in Lakeville.
That's right. At least we don't live down in Farmington, where there's a whole lot of farm and not a lot of Ington.
That's right. And unfortunately, Graham Thickens couldn't make it in person, but...
Graham Thickens here, running out of time.
So he's up north, or on his way up north, or he's up there now. But...
he had to carve out time for tweeting, apparently, because I see him tweeting right now.
Is he really? Yeah. Okay.
Apple stock.
I've pretty much decided that if I ever go back on the radio again, Steve Borsch is going to be my producer, because, you know, you always go out, you get the little sound clips, you're doing all the right work.
I have there's no sound effects.
Well, see? Given like the time, I'm sure we could get that set up for you.
That's right. Well, it's because of the huge money that we're making here at Minivate on the podcast. I can afford to carve out all that time. Oh, well,
it's so true. We're lousy with cash. I'm telling you.
It is. Well, you know, what's funny, too, is almost every time I talk to somebody in customer service or something, can I help you? Is there anything else I can help you with? I said, well, yeah, you know, you can send me a box of cash. And there's always a pause on the other end. It's like, well, if I had a box of cash, I'd keep it. It's like, yeah, I've been waiting for UPS.
Some lucky guy in South Dakota now has a big box of cash. Did you see this, like, winner South Dakota? So the guy won the whole lottery, or somebody won the whole lottery. Yeah, nobody knows it is yet.
Yeah, yeah.
$232 million. Hello. Man.
Unbelievable.
I think I'll pay off the double wide, but I'm going to keep my job.
Well, you guys don't know this story, but my mom passed in 94, and a couple of years later, my dad calls me one day and says, hey, can I come over to your office? Now, he'd never been there, and he shows up, and he's sitting there, and I'm kind of wondering what his agenda is, and he pulls out a checkbook, and he starts writing me a check. I go, what are you doing? He goes, I'm just writing each one of you kids a check, and he hands me a check for $2,000. He says, you know, you guys had to pay for Alex's birth and all this stuff because it was a pre-existing condition. I go, Dad, you don't have to give me that money. I mean, we're fine. Thank you, though. And he said, well, here's why. And he pulls out a Polaroid. He'd won $100,000 in the Powerball.
Oh, geez.
And it couldn't have happened at a better time because, you know, he had to pay all this money because of my mom was so sick for so long. And
wow. And
it couldn't happen to a better guy and at a better time. But it was just so I actually know someone who won something from the Powerball.
Oh, very cool. Well, I'd be satisfied with that.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. That'd be good.
Well, let's talk Minivate. Let's talk innovation. And we were chatting a little bit before we started with Tim, who has stumbled along a little local Twitter thing here. What do you got, Tim?
Besides the wine thing, I'm a foodie, too. So I read Serious Eats, which is a blog. They have a list of street vendors using Twitter, which, you know, is kind of interesting. And I've seen this before. I think that Koji Barbecue in L.A. is probably the most famous. They've been written up around the blogosphere. And, you know, they've using Twitter to tell people where they're going to be. So it's a great application. And as I'm scrolling down this list of mostly California-based or New York City-based things, I was happy to see the Midwest represented by Chef Shack, which is at Chef Shack numeral one, which is a Minneapolis truck, and they're currently at the farmer's market. So I think I'm going to go down and pay them a visit.
Well, yeah, find out what their reaction has been, what their connections have been with people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So this is the kind of thing that I'll write a post about this because it's a it's an interesting local application of Twitter. And I was surprised actually to see it. So hopefully more businesses like this, if you have a catering truck or whatever, you know, that moves around, would use Twitter. And they also have a Facebook page and all the normal stuff you'd expect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So this is great.
Huh. Well, also, and of course now I have to find it, but it was either Twin Cities Magazine or Minneapolis St. Paul had a listing of restaurants that had Twitter accounts. And locally here, so I'll find that as well. But so it's starting to crank up.
What are they doing with Twitter? What a restaurant is it? Are they sending out just what they're making that night, and then maybe discounts or something like that? Or
yeah, it's well, I'll give you one example. So Green Mill, our the pizza place has one, and they I'm just looking it up here. I'll have to edit this out because I can't find it. I thought I could put my fingers on it instantly, but
for those of you that are just joining us, you just missed a big edit. So, well, it's interesting that, you know, this Chef Shack thing. I was looking at it on their Twitter page, and then linked their web presence is Facebook. They don't even have a website. So,
no, they actually do have a website, but
they do.
It's quite meager. Yeah, it's at chefshack.org.
And it's an org. Okay,
and it's a super old school HTML site.
With frames.
Yeah. This is like super old school. You know, I would do this site in
you guys are just being snobbish.
Like in Text Edit. I mean, this is like a site you do in Text Edit. I mean, literally. But
yeah,
anyway.
Scary.
Or Notepad on the Windows side.
Yep.
No, I mean, if it works, great.
And is
this would be the kind of place that I would
tell I built my site.
No, I mean, this would be the kind of a nice business where I'd want to know about what's going on. And, you know, if they had time to blog or whatever, that would be cool. And you could obviously integrate what they're doing at Facebook and Twitter on a blog and make that sort of their home base.
Oh, interesting.
But
so
anyway.
That's what's happening locally in the Twitter space. You got to like that. But on the national front, you wanted to talk a little bit about Bing, right?
Well, a little bit about Bing. This week there were so many things that happened simultaneously, and mainly driven by the All Things D conference. And I absolutely loved, seeing the release of Bing and then going there and there's nothing there. I mean, it's not live yet.
I know. I saw that too. It's like, oh, well, I got to check this out. And it's basically a video.
Well, so
yeah, it is a video.
I poked around and and it wasn't that hard to find, but went to the Bing virtual press kit because what I was looking for was their value proposition in a nutshell. And I finally found it buried in a video. And there's a guy named Eric Hadley who had been with Microsoft, went to Yahoo in November of 2008, and then came back to run MSN's search, and now is, I guess, brand boy for Bing. And here's what he said inside of that video.
There's a lot of frustration in the search space today. Any search product you go out and look at today, it's just a list of links after links after links. And that's not what Bing is. Bing is a product that's going to get you the answer you're looking for. Bing's going to help you make that decision. We decided the world needs more than another search engine. They need a decision engine. And that's what Bing is. Bing is there to help people make those critical decisions in their life, whether it's about your health, where you're going to go to dinner, where you're going to get a good deal on your next camera, or back to school clothes for your kids. It's less time searching and more time finding and deciding with Bing.
So that's the value proposition, is it's qualitative rather than quantitative. And everything that they're positioning with Bing is all about, and they never bring up the G word, Google, but it's all about brute force throwing lots of links at you versus what they're delivering, which is high value, qualitative results. And,
okay,
and
so is it qualitative based on use or qualitative based on that company being able to buy a spot in the qualitative ranking?
That's a very, very insightful question, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you so much. I do what I can.
Are they still using the algorithms to do this, or is it kind of like Mahalo, where you have people that are, you know, real humans that are actually curating some of it and making these relationships?
Nobody knows, but Youssef Mehdi, senior vice president for Microsoft over this area, said we've taken the algorithmic programming up an order of magnitude. Each search result page is customized according to what type of search you do: health, travel, shopping, news, sports, etc. The algorithms determine not only the order of results on the page, but the layout of the page itself. So, you know, it's when I took a look at the screenshots, I'll put some of this in the show notes. When I looked at the screenshots, I actually like the way it's categorizing the results.
Yeah, it's laid out very nicely, and it's appealing. But I guess the question tends to be, and we've had this discussion where we're talking about social media monitoring. You know, what is the game changer? Is this the game changer? The difference between Google and Yahoo, is this really that much different? Does it just give you fewer links? I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, because a lot of people that are searching really want a lot of different choices, I think.
Yeah, but I've seen some studies, results of studies that talk about how most people will go three pages deep and that's it. So they might have, 100 pages of links and they'll go three pages in because the most relevant results are at the top, depending on what their search string is. But I've found with me, I've gotten, I think, pretty good at playing with Google in terms of putting in search strings. And you can get demonstrably different results by just moving words around within the string, or putting the year first, or looking for files, by putting file type colon MP3 or PDF or DOC, and finding all of these documents that come up. And most people can't do that. They'll just put in a natural language query and hit search, and then, hopefully something comes up. But people don't invest a lot of time in that. So if this, and we won't know until we can actually use the doggone thing.
Right, exactly.
Whether or not it's functioning. But, if they can, in fact, pull this off, I think it's pretty interesting. But here was the kicker with this. Did you guys see TechCrunch's article? What just happened? Thursday was supposed to be Bing Day. Because, all of a sudden, they do the Bing release and all of that. And then Google's Wave thing happens and developers go absolutely wild. And
I think Wave, the reason that it was received the way it was, is that it's this platform built on top of HTML5.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So that's why it kind of took off. But Bing looks extremely interesting. And if I'm, Robert Metcalf at FlySpy, I'm a little bit worried that the guys from Redmond are coming right after me.
Exactly. And I know that
you see the airline stuff that was part of that demo.
The airline stuff, the nice thing about that if it really works the way it's being, championed, to be able to see 7 days out what the best price is going to be over that 7 days, that's kind of interesting. And, you see that pop right up instead of having to dig and dig and dig. So, yeah, I agree. It's got some interesting elements. Mm-hmm. So, talk a little bit more about Wave. Let's go down that path a little bit. This looks really very cool. Is it overkill?
No, I don't think so.
When I looked at the video and I got about 45 minutes into it, it is what they say it is, which is it's like what you would do if you invented email today and not 40 years ago.
Will people go for it? I mean, the biggest challenge anybody has is dealing with change, and email is very simple right now, as far as at least we've grown up with it. And so we know it's simple, or we feel it's simple. Will this add another level of complexity that we may not necessarily as a group get behind and say, okay, I'm going to start doing my email this way.
Well, I think those of us that have made the move to the cloud, so I do all my email and filter all my email through Gmail now, will gravitate towards this because this makes complete sense. Those that haven't and that may be still on the Exchange stack, you know, and plugged into that, maybe not. So I think it depends. So individuals probably will move to this faster than businesses will.
Well, and here's what I saw with it, you know, in terms of creating a Wave container about it. I mean, I saw this impacting Meebo and Tiny Chat, you know, these embeddable threaded discussions, because you can take a Wave container and embed it on a web page or in a blog. So now you can sort of carry that into another space and just add people to it. I'm sure there'll be ways to use Google Friend Connect, for example, and connect it together. So I see the potential of it impacting everything from threaded discussions to social networks to the way that we communicate with email, and also to collaborative vendors. I had coffee yesterday with Steve Kickert at one place, and they've made huge strides with that platform. And it's really, I got into it last night and was using I signed up for a team account. And I looked at that, and there's going to be elements of this that they're going to be able to leverage and embed directly in one place potentially. Because if you can collate, you know, Google Docs and spreadsheets and all of that inside of a Wave container and have discussions within it as well, then you can, you know, essentially provide people the opportunity to sort of encapsulate stuff around an idea or around a project or around a work group. So I saw a lot of potential with it.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's very interesting. I'm sure you guys have signed up to be notified when it's ready to go, right?
I already have an account.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
you don't have an account because I'm sorry, it's not available yet.
Right. Well, the people that were at that unveiling all got one. So.
Yeah. Well, actually, Sergey called me yesterday and said, you know, asked me if I wanted to get involved a little bit early, and I said, well, I'm kind of busy right now, but.
Sure. Okay. Why not?
Well, and here's the one thing about this that really struck me, because I watched the entire video. And I have to admit, about halfway through, I began to wander. My mind wandered a little bit. I was multitasking. But at any rate, I think I caught almost every salient point, especially when the developers would stand up and clap and cheer at some given element. Then I'd kind of rewind it and watch that piece. But here's what I saw, is I saw an incredible opportunity for Google to be in a position to now know context for our digital breadcrumbs and our participation and our interaction online. Because as they started to show the demo of travel, where, you know, let's go shopping. I love to go shopping. You know, I need new fins. You know, so now contextually, you know, there's a trip planning process going on, and there are shopping opportunities. And so now you can start to predict and deliver ads that are about scuba gear based on someone's location. And then when they start to collaborate and put their photos in there, you'll be able to, you know, have photo finishing ads presented. But it'll all not only be based on location, but be based on context.
And right, you can put metadata about the photos too, because you can assume from, you know, the conversation where they might be from, and you know, you can get Google Maps data. A lot of cameras have GPS in them now.
Yes.
So if there's that data, you can place them on Google Maps, all that kind of stuff.
And you could make assumptions based on camera type. I mean, if somebody's got the latest and greatest camera, or they've got a digital SLR of a certain kind, you know, you're able to start to make some assumptions and predict what that person is likely to do. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you can see, because people were writing in posts about, well, how the hell are they going to make any money on this? Well, the point is that they're not going to charge for it. The point is that it's all about an incentive to create a platform upon which people will build new services and new opportunities, and then people will use it to come together, you know, around this platform and participate. And Google will be the winner in terms of being able to predict and deliver ads and deliver value to people wherever they happen to be and whatever they happen to be talking about. I just think it's a brilliant move.
Interesting. So, I just saw from my Twitter stream is a Computer World article on bashing Bing and whacking Wave. I haven't had a chance to read it, obviously. I can see. Why am I leery of Microsoft's new search engine and Google's new email system? It's from, I guess, Mike Elgin. I don't know Mike. So it'll be interesting to see that.
Yeah. So did you guys take a look at All Things D, the videos?
Not all of them, no.
No.
I poked around. Yeah, I poked around a few and looked at a few of them. I was interested in Ballmer's discussion with Walt Mossberg, and also the Palm Pre announcement with Roger McNamee and John Rubenstein. And they got up and they did a demo, and they showed some new things, some new applications in there. But what struck me was how fluid the Pre looks in terms of manipulation. And it's, of course, built on WebKit and WebOS. But what are you guys' thoughts about the Pre and going up against the iPhone? And because it's going to, what, launch in 3 days?
Well, it starts 6th of June.
Okay.
Well, I know guys, but I've been pretty involved in what's going on with Pre, because I decided that, you know, I would go ahead and get a Pre because I'm already on the Sprint network for one thing. And you guys, I'm tired of you guys making fun of my Steam driven Palm Trio 650.
Sorry.
So I thought, you know, this would be the phone that I would go ahead and upgrade to, because I've been Sprint long enough. And, so I did a couple of blog posts about it at RemainCon, but also, I even actually started a Twitter, account called, Palm Pre for me, just to sort of track. I decided I was going to be the guy that stands in line for the first one. I figured, you know, I've never done that. I'm going to experience that. And I got to tell you that I've been a little disappointed just as far as the way Sprint is rolling out the Pre. I'm very intrigued by the Pre, mainly because of the ease of transferring, you know, the service over to it, but also the features that it offers, the apps that'll eventually become available because of the WebOS, and I particularly like having a hands-on keyboard that I can actually touch, not a screen keyboard. So yeah. I was really looking forward to that, but I got to tell you that it's getting too complex. It's right now too complex and a little bit spendy to change my account. I have three phones on Sprint, and I have to change all of them to the data plan that will deal with the Palm Pre.
Is that because you're on a family plan?
Yeah, on a family plan. So
they don't have separate data plans for each phone?
No. Well, you can do that, but you got to get out of the family plan. So you have to bust up.
Doesn't that just suck?
It's very frustrating.
I'm on T-Mobile, and two of us have smartphones, so we have separate plans. So I've got a $20 plan for my Windows mobile phone, and my son has a G1, and so his is like $25, I think. So it's all separate. Each phone has its own data plan.
Yeah, this is you've got to upgrade. So frankly, my kid's Samsung handset is not going to be able to handle streaming video. I don't know exactly why I'm basically being forced to. I would be forced to upgrade that phone and pay for that service. So it basically works out to about $570 difference in plans just to get one phone upgraded to the Pre. That's on top of paying for the Pre, $560 annually. So it's kind of frustrating. A couple of notes. This is no reflection on Palm, obviously, because it's their handset. It's what Sprint is deciding to do with rolling it out. But also, I'll be honest, the Sprint customer service on this has been pretty darn good. as far as the Sprint connection via email or phone. My Sprint agent locally here in Lakeville sucks. So it's just, you know, they were not helpful at all, you know, and of course getting their attention at the counter was difficult when they're on hold and they're, you know, their Bluetooth headset. So, but anyway, that's where it's at. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be a first day or not. I may just go ahead and wait, and I may see what comes out of WWDC as far as, you know, the next step with the iPhone.
Yeah. Cause the rumor is they're going to have a less expensive data plan.
Yep.
And also $99, you know, the existing form factor being $99 phone to try to open up the market more.
Yeah, I mean, it may either be the same price or cheaper for me just to leave Sprint and go over to AT&T and pick up an iPhone.
Yeah. Well, do you guys know Jay Winia? So no. So Jay is a developer here locally and just a really good guy. And I originally 2 years ago listened to a podcast that Greg Van Buren did with him. I thought, this is a guy I'm going to have to meet someday. Well, then it just sort of never happened. And then I had lunch with Garrick and said, hey, by the way, would you do an email intro to Jay Winia? Because I'd like to just meet the guy at some point. And we had coffee about a week and a half ago. And just a super bright guy, talks a mile a minute, just, you know, really, really a good guy. And this guy has like every phone ever made. And he's got an Android phone with him and so on. So I think, Phil, you need to get a pre, and then we need to convince somebody in the group to get a Android so we can experiencing these things.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I'd love to. I really would love to.
Probably on the Android. I'll probably either go iPhone or Android, depending on what happens.
Okay, so tell me, Tim, you were going to say why you wanted to stay away from the pre.
I don't want to switch to Sprint. So well, if the pre was on T-Mobile, I'd strongly consider it.
Okay. So that's the only reason. Yeah, it seemed to me that you had some issues with the phone itself or
oh no, I think that. I think it's a great phone. I'm not going to switch carriers because of the phone. Now, right. I may end up on AT&T again because of that's the only place you can get an iPhone. So,
right.
Or buy an old iPhone and, you know, it's 2G version and just use it on T-Mobile, which is another thing that can be done.
So the pre fascinates me a little bit because it's really merging a lot of different services. The fact that, well, first it comes with Twitter search, but also the iTunes interface is kind of intriguing. Now you can only download the non-DRM content from iTunes, but it's going to be an interesting.
I wonder why that is, because I thought that was a brilliant idea to spoof an iPhone. You know, it actually shows up on the device list as an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Why you wouldn't be able to do everything you can do with an iPhone?
Well, Apple knows you're not really an iPhone.
Well, no, but I think from a programming perspective, they're basically presenting to iTunes the same string that an iPhone presents. I don't think there's any way to know, in any way really to cut off this loophole. I'm surprised no one else has done this before because it's just a brilliant idea.
It really is. It really is. But I'm just wondering if Apple will find a way to stop that from occurring.
I think they'll try to.
They'll try, yeah.
They'll try, but I believe the way that when I was read up on it, the way that it's done, and I mean, these are the original, you know, all these engineers came out of Apple. They worked on the iPhone. So if anyone knows how to do this, it's these guys. And I'm not sure if there's anything that can be really done short of upgrading the firmware on every iPhone on the planet, which I guess, you know, can be done. But I would think that the pre guys are going to reverse engineer it right away. So I think it's going to be yet another cat and mouse game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, the Prix does offer a lot of, for our local developers, I know, offer a lot of options being built on the WebOS platform. And, you know, I was talking with Lisa Foote over at Quingo and also my partner at Local Tone Systems, Justin Grammons, who does phone development, platform development for, but he does Android and iPhone. So and they're very interested in whether this Palm Prix is going to go. What do you think as far as, do you think this is going to open up some doors for some local developers here?
Yes and no. I think that there's a lot more opportunity on the iPhone and Android platforms just because they've both been established. And the Prix is brand new and has no installed base. So, you know, if I'm a developer, I'm gonna develop for the iPhone first. And then if I can easily port over to Android as that develops, particularly this year, because there's going to be T-Mobile's announcing three different handsets from different manufacturers. So there'll be an HTC, a Samsung, and one from Motorola. So there's going to be a lot more.
On the Android platform?
Yeah. So they'll have four phones by the end of the year that will totally address from the low end to the high end, all running Android. So I think that that platform is going to be more important. And what Google's doing with Wave, I think, you know, obviously they're going to track all this Wave stuff into Android. So it's going to be a platform to watch. So the question for me is there a place in the market for a third major platform like the iPhone? And I'm not sure. And we'll see. I mean,
well, it's definitely a make or break for Palm. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I think they've done a great job. I just don't know if it's enough.
Well, here's my take, because I look at this look at each one discreetly, iPhone, Google Android, and the Palm OS, you know, the new Web OS for the Palm Prix. And when you look at all three of them are based, you know, their web connection is based on WebKit, which is open standard. And it does, you know, real-time streaming protocol in the H.263 and 264. And possibly one of the differentiators is having a Flash player on the Prix. This could really, that could be a differentiator to the point where, you know, Adobe puts a lot of wood behind the bat to really help them accelerate the Prix with respect to Flash applications. But I'm not sure it's going to be enough, because with the things that I've seen, the demos that I've seen on HTML5 and the sorts of things that can be delivered as web apps, I'm not even sure Flash is necessarily going to be there and have the critical mass that it has for the foreseeable future. When HTML5 comes out, really fully supported probably next year, I think Adobe's going to have a tough time with Flash. So maybe this will help them, you know, get the thing established, though, because they'll probably have a good year or runway.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. You know, the one thing that is frustrating is the way Sprint is choosing to sort of leverage it into, you know, increasing your monthly bill. That's kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge issue. And I know that as I look at, you know, the possibility of getting another phone since I'm off contract now, that is one of the major things, is that right now, because I'm on this family plan with T-Mobile, my phone basically costs me $30 a month. And if I get an iPhone, even if it's this mythical $99 iPhone that's coming out, I'm looking at least $70 a month just for for the service. And that's, you know, it's over 100% more. So it's like, okay, what am I getting? And is it worth that? And to me, no, the answer is no. Now, if it was $50, yeah, it probably would be worth it.
Yeah. You know? I hear you. No, you and I are kind of cut from the same cloth. We're basically cheap.
No, I'm not cheap.
You don't want to have to pay for stuff that you're not going to use. I'm not going to watch video on my phone. I'm sorry. I just don't, you know, I'm probably not going to watch TV on my phone. I'm not kind of cut from that cloth. But at the same time, I would really very much like to have some of the access to some of the features that are being offered, and they're going to make it a little bit too expensive for me at this particular point in time. So, but Sprint will only be able to do it for about 6 months because it's going to be able to, you know, the pre will be available on other services after that.
Oh, yeah. I think they're going to be on every carrier. So, I, you know, you're already seeing rumors about the Centro, which I think they're calling the EOS, which is basically the Palm Centro running WebOS, and that will appear first on AT&T. So, I think they're going to cover the entire market. You know, every carrier that they have a relationship, which is pretty much all of them. Will eventually have the pre and have whatever the low end equivalent is. So it's going to be, yeah, it'll be 6 months, 12 months that Sprint will have this advantage, and then it'll be completely equalized.
Yeah. And I don't know. I can see them definitely kind of pissing away the advantage, but.
Well, it's I'm not sure. I mean, Palm really has to knock this one out of the park.
They do.
In this next year, there's toast. So, you know, a lot of Palm's future is tied up with Sprint right now.
Well, there's no question. But, you know, here's the other thing that is that something that most people are not looking at. I know I really haven't until I started to really think this through as we're getting ready for this podcast. But when you look at the Apple stores and the distribution that they have in terms of getting the word out and exposing people to the platform. I mean, I know what my experience has been walking into an AT&T store and trying to get a question answered or trying to buy an accessory. And there's a level of cluelessness there that is pretty profound. And walking into the Apple store, it's exactly the polar opposite. I mean, they know exactly what accessories work with what and what each battery you know, extra battery device does and the length of it and so forth. And I think that's going to be a huge plus for them. But I'll come back to the openness of Google Android, the alleged openness of the Palm Web OS, because we're not really all certain about that, and the relatively closed nature of Apple's platform. And it's just... I think the net is exactly what you just said, is that they got about a year of runway. Mm-hmm. And that's it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
I think
we're
going to know in 6 months. And, you know, apparently in 6 months, Verizon will have a version of the pre. So you know, to me, if I was running Palm, that's huge, because Verizon has arguably the best network in North America. They've got lots of customers. They really don't have anything to fight the iPhone with. So a Verizon pre is big. So if they can get through the next 6 months with Sprint and then land Verizon, I think they'll be in good shape.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, unless the pre doesn't work as advertised.
Well, we'll find out. Well, somebody will find out. It may not be me.
Well, early reviews have been, you know, mostly positive, although yeah. I did see one that was sort of mixed, particularly yeah. with the apparently the keyboard is not all that it should be. But this may be a pre-production issue and not what most people will see.
Yeah.
Or it could just be one of those things where you have to get used to it.
Right. Well, and again, I'm used to my Trio, so it's probably a keyboard that's very similar to that, unless they really have moved the buttons even closer together. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I think I used the Trio 650 for a while, and I think that was the best mobile keyboard. I mean, it was the right size, the buttons right. In the right way. So Palm knows how to make those thumb boards.
Yep.
No question.
So what's coming up this week, guys? Is there anything... in the tech space locally that we should be looking for or heading to or paying attention to?
You know, that's a very, very good question.
I don't believe there really is anything as far as our little circle, but if somebody has an event or a session or a presentation coming up, feel free to just email us or comment.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the bottom of this post, because it would be nice to know what's going on.
Well, the Everything About Sex Expo is going on out in or down in Atlanta, Georgia. And
that's not local.
No,
well, maybe for you it is. I don't know.
No, I'm just
saying.
Maybe,
maybe that's where you're broadcasting from right this very instant. Maybe you're in a hotel room in Atlanta wearing your latex pants and get ready to head out the door.
Well, all of the above, except I don't have latex pants. So, oh, man. All right. Well, I think that's about all we got for today. What do you think? Good.
I think it's great. Listen, Tim, we're counting on you to bring us up to speed on the wine world and also bring us up to speed on the place at the farmer's market, the chefs at the farmer's market.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'll go down there and check it out.
Sounds good.
Good. All right. Well, have a great one, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Be well.
All righty. Take care.
Yeah, have a good week.